pornographic emails on Pennsylvania state computers are suddenly in the news again. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Court documents unsealed today by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court indicate graphic and offensive emails were found on the computers of two former prosecutors in the state attorney general's office who now work in the Philadelphia DA's office. Lawyers for State Attorney General Kathleen Kane say it was those prosecutors' efforts to keep that digital porn secret that led to the criminal charges she now faces for allegedly leaking confidential investigative material. Joining us to try to sort it all out is our Capitol correspondent, Mary Wilson. And Mary, we heard a lot about pornographic emails on state computers 1 year ago. Why not start by reminding us why they were uncovered and what's happened to those who've already been identified as having them?
So this started when Kathleen Kane reopened the Jerry Sandusky investigation. You might remember that she campaigned on a pledge to review that case. And in so doing, her office recovered deleted emails that had been exchanged by many current and former office employees and many, many other people. These email chains were lengthy. There were people on them who were in law enforcement, and not just in Pennsylvania. Kane released some of those emails last year after media organizations began requesting them, but she did not release all of the emails, and she did not name all of the emails' participants. The release led to a purge of state employees and the forced resignation of a state justice, whom she never did name.
In this rapidly evolving story, today's big news is the assertion in one of these court documents that Frank Fina, formerly a prosecutor and an adversary of Kathleen Kane, and another one, Mark Costanzo, had porn on their computers. What kind of stuff are we talking about?
These are graphic sexual images. There are jokes that play on racial stereotypes, jokes about people who are overweight. Women are repeatedly objectified in many of these emails. There are suggestive photos that appear to be of former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin, another photo of Barack Obama, and a suggestive depiction of Hillary Clinton.
And so now Kathleen Kane faces criminal charges that she leaked secret investigative materials to embarrass Frank Fina. She says the pornographic emails are directly connected to her case and will help exonerate her. Did we learn more today about what she means by this?
In multiple court filings last November, these are the ones that were released this week, Kane argued that the entire investigation into her was triggered by these two adversaries, Fina and Costanzo. And she points out that her office unearthed the emails shortly before a special prosecutor was appointed to start probing her actions. Kane says Fina and Costanzo manipulated and exploited the investigation that ensued. But it is not clear how the alleged motive of Fina and Costanzo to suppress the emails could exonerate Kane. She faces charges for allegedly leaking secret information in another case and then attempting a cover-up.
Whatever Fina and Costanzo did or did not do to get Kane in trouble, there's still the matter of what their current employer, Philadelphia District Attorney Seth Williams, thinks of their judgment in handling this kind of pornography. Are their jobs in jeopardy?
The DA's office released a statement this afternoon. The office is reviewing the emails and will consider what role current employees played in their distribution. I should mention here that Kane said in a filing last year that Fina and Costanzo should be investigated and possibly prosecuted for the emails they exchanged alone. However, many of the participants on these email chains who were revealed in today's document release continue to work in Kane's office.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you, Dave.
WHYY's Mary Wilson on NewsWorks Tonight. Doctors and hospitals have gotten very good at preventing transmission of HIV from mothers to babies during birth. Just 2% of babies end up infected with the virus. But as WHYY's Jessica McDonald reports, once leaving the maternity ward, lots of moms in Philadelphia don't continue treating their disease.
New city statistics paint a worrisome picture for new moms who have HIV.
Unfortunately, we did see that a lot of women did fall out of care, and it wasn't, you know, 2 years later, a year later. It was almost nearly immediately after birth, after delivery of the infant, they were no longer in care.
Joella Adams of the Philadelphia Department of Public Health says just 38% of women sought care for their disease within 3 months of giving birth. That's a problem because women who don't get care then generally failed to get care 1 and 2 years later and also to have higher viral loads.
If a woman is not in HIV care and has a high viral load, the infant is more likely to become sick as well, even if the infant is not HIV infected.
Drexel infectious disease specialist Florence Monplaisir says the results suggest it's important to intervene early.
The pregnancy and the immediate postpartum period is a critical time in the lives of those women, and it's an opportunity for healthcare providers to really ensure sustained engagement.
She says part of the problem is that healthcare is so fragmented. Integrating care for moms and their kids, she says, could really help. I'm Jessica McDonald, WHYY News.
Scholar Academies operates one of the highest performing charter schools in Philadelphia. So when the school district asked the organization to take over one of its own struggling schools in 2010, it expected significant improvement. Now, 5 years after the transfer, the school has changed hands once again, as WHYY's Kevin McCory reports.
Frederick Douglass Elementary School in North Philadelphia became a Renaissance charter in 2010, operated by Scholar Academies. But today, it opened anew as one of Mastery Charter's growing portfolio of schools. Courtney Collins Shapiro is Mastery's chief innovation officer.
So we think that the school was doing okay, but it needs to get a lot better.
While most charters take in students through citywide lotteries, the district's Renaissance schools are more like traditional neighborhood schools, taking all comers within certain boundaries. Since 2010, the district has handed 20 schools to charter operators through this process. And while some have seen gains on state tests, Mastery has shown the most success maintaining growth.
Turning around struggling neighborhood schools and inner city neighborhoods is not easy work.
Mark Gleason is the executive director of the Philadelphia School Partnership, which gave Mastery $1.5 million to aid what the School Reform Commission has dubbed a turnaround of a turnaround.
Scholars did some really good things here. They were disappointed that they didn't have a few more years to sort of prove the case, but I give them a lot of credit.
Credit, Gleason says, for not dragging the process out. When the SRC considered changing operators after 2 years of declining state test scores, Scholar Academies could have appealed. Instead, it reached out to Mastery in an effort to limit upheaval for students and parents. On Wednesday, those parents dropped kids off in Douglass's schoolyard. Most had positive things to say about the work done by Scholar Academies, but were optimistic about the changeover. Valerie Brown is a grandmother of a seventh grade boy and a fifth grade girl.
Mastery is tops. That's what I was told. I have read up on it, and I'm going to see. I hope it's a big improvement. And we'll see by first report card.
Mom Deshante Wagner, whose son Salim is in the fourth grade, was happy to find out that Mastery was changing the school's policy for dealing with kids with behavioral issues.
Just really anger issues. He get mad when he doesn't get his way, so he don't want to listen to the teachers and, you know, just being a child, but he go a little overboard with it.
The program Scholar Academies ran moved her son, who has an emotional support special education disability, into a separate wing of the building.
Like, they couldn't bring nothing, no book bags, no pencils, nothing, only money. So, you know, it was kind of like the kids was in prison. I feel a lot better that he's in regular classes now.
Mastery itself has undergone significant changes over the years. Leaders say there's now more of a focus on critical thinking and personal grit, less so on its original no-excuses model that hinged on strict discipline and traditional instruction. To teach in a Mastery school is to embrace a very specific pedagogical model. The 75% of last year's faculty that remained at Douglass went through weeks of training this summer. At Mastery, a centralized team develops the curriculum and chooses materials for each of its schools. Again, Mastery Chief Innovation Officer Courtney Collins Shapiro.
We can create sort of the framework for the lesson, all the materials that you need for that. Now your job is to work with all the other teachers in your content area to say, how am I going to teach it?
The SRC has faith that Mastery's teachers will come up with good answers. It re-upped Douglass's charter until 2020. For WHYY News, I'm Kevin McCory.
On the public side of the Philadelphia academic system, anxieties surround the start of the school year. NewsWorks blogger Solomon Jones notes that the worry revolves around a familiar issue, funding.
Not long ago, before perpetual deficits and the slow erosion of public trust made books, then students, then dozens of underutilized schools disappear, The start of the school year was a time of giddy anticipation. Sadly, in Philadelphia, that excitement has been replaced with a nagging sense of anxiety. That's especially true this year, because the state budget impasse has created a situation where schools could run out of money by mid-October. Without monies coming from the state, we will have cash to operate and open schools, but at some point that runs out, Philadelphia School Superintendent Dr. William Height told me. And that runs out, he said, because the money that we would normally get from the state between August and September is not coming. That means that the district has to run on its own cash flow, not just the district, charter schools. So this could impact all 203,000 students who are being educated in public schools here in Philadelphia. It wasn't supposed to be this way. Not again. City Council came through with $70 million of the district's $105 million budget request for the upcoming year. The city also held a pilot tax lien sale in hopes of raising another $30 million for the district. Those hopes fell short, with early estimates saying the city raised only $2 million. That brings us to the state. Governor Wolf's budget proposes a $159 million hike in basic and special education funding for Philadelphia schools. The Republican-controlled legislature passed a budget that included far less. But it's about more than just numbers. According to State Senator Vincent Hughes, it's about the restoration of the millions of dollars that were cut from our education system over the last 4 years. That's what the governor's holding out for, Hughes said. It's what we're fighting for in these budget negotiations. Well, that's fine. We expect the governor and state legislators to fight for us. But what if the fight stretches on through October? What if the fight doesn't yield the expected results? What if the schools run out of money? As the parent of a Philadelphia public school student, I'd like to see our state meet its obligation to provide a quality public school education to every single student. That means addressing the fact that Pennsylvania is home to America's largest spending disparity between rich and poor school districts. It means owning up to the fact that right now in Pennsylvania, high-poverty school districts spend 33% less per student than those in the group with the least poverty. And while that ugly disparity wasn't created under this governor, fixing it should be his top priority. As a parent who remembers a time when the first day of school was about anticipation rather than anxiety, I hope that both the governor and the legislature will abandon their squabbles long enough to remember what's most important, our children. I'm Solomon Jones.
Solomon Jones writes the Philadelphia Experiment blog at newsworks.org. Checking this evening's headlines, New Jersey's top court rules that immigrant children who fled abuse and abandonment in their home countries only need to show that one parent mistreated them in order for authorities to consider granting them legal residency. Experts say today's Supreme Court finding is likely to help at least 500 children facing deportation in New Jersey. The ruling overturns lower court decisions that said children had to show they'd been mistreated by both parents for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security to consider giving special immigrant juvenile status. LaSalle University's new president announces the Philadelphia school has laid off 23 employees just 2 months into her tenure. The Philadelphia Inquirer reports that a $12 million deficit and a declining freshman enrollment are to blame for the cutbacks at the university. 80 degrees, clear skies on Independence Mall. It's 6:20. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Mostly clear skies, the call this evening, low overnight around 65 degrees. Sunny tomorrow, Thursday's high in the low 80s. Sunshine for Friday as well, high in the mid 80s to the weekend. Enjoy partly sunny days Saturday and Sunday. A bit of a warm up, high each day approaching 90 degrees. Still ahead, the Little League World Series attracts hordes of tourists to one small Pennsylvania city, and the locals there wouldn't have it any other way.
That's the great thing about traditions. You know, when you can find something that's regular, that you can find comfort in, and that you enjoy, why wouldn't you want to repeat those things?
Newsworks Tonight swings for the fences on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Comcast NBC, Universal. Since 2011, more than 2 million low-income people have benefited from low-cost, high-speed internet through the Internet Essentials program. Learn more at comcastcorporation.com/IE.
I'm Carol Hills. Pope Francis visits New York next month. There'll be pomp and circumstance and some tough questions at a Catholic school in the heavily immigrant neighborhood of East Harlem.
How does it feel to be the first non-European pope in 1,200 years? I'm going to ask him, like, if he collects the stamps with his face on them.
Talking with the Pope next time on The World.
Tonight at 8 on WHYY.
It's America's Test Kitchen Live.
Hi, I'm Christopher Kimball. Join me for a live performance and an insider behind-the-scenes view of America's Test Kitchen.
Wednesday, October 21st at the Merriam Theater. More at whyy.org/events.
It's scary out there. We know that. The Dow going crazy, China doing who knows what. So here's what we're going to do. Next time on Marketplace, another way to think about all this volatility from the guy who invented the Volatility Index. What this is all going to mean for U.S. businesses, both big and small. And of course, the rest of the day's business news and, oh yeah, the numbers from Wall Street. It's all from APM.
Coming up next on WHYY.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Philadelphia officials and the World Meeting of Families are working to add some pizzazz to the upcoming papal visit, which has generated plenty of angst over traffic, crowds, and restrictions in recent weeks. WHYY's Tom McDonald reports.
We are reimagining the Center City area from South Street to Girard Avenue and the Delaware River to 38th Street as the Francis Festival Grounds.
Donna Farrell of the World Meeting of Families says organizers want people to expand their plans for the papal weekend beyond the September 27th Mass and Festival on the Parkway. They're encouraging visitors to come downtown to feel the vibe and watch the events on one of the 40 billboard-sized TV screens that will be scattered through the area formerly known as the traffic box. That's the section that people cannot enter with a vehicle once security restrictions take effect during the papal visit. But Farrell says they're trying to make sure people understand this is a fun event to be enjoyed, not feared.
We're working incredibly hard and fast to address all of the questions and concerns that we've been hearing. We hear you, and we can't promise we can solve every problem and do it all, but we will try.
Mayor Michael Nutter says the traffic box rebranding is not in response to all the negative reaction when the traffic restrictions came out. He says organizers have been talking about issues for some time.
In many, many of these meetings, different ideas come up, and we say, hey, that sounds like fun, or that sounds good, or let's do that. We want people to really enjoy this and experience it.
Businesses are also stepping up, including the Reading Terminal Market, which Nutter says has made special arrangements with the city for deliveries during the papal weekend. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
For help planning your Francis Festival, check out our online guide, The Pope in Philly, where you can get details on events and logistics for the big weekend. It's at whyy.org/popeinphilly. It's late August, and that means one thing for residents in and around Williamsport, Pennsylvania. The Little League World Series is in town. The Super Bowl of youth baseball.
Home run from the number 9 hitter, Ernesto Rios. And Mexico will win this one 11-1.
For nearly 70 years, teams from around the world have descended on this small city with hopes of leaving as a champion. And as WHYY's Aaron Moselle reports, many neighbors never tire of welcoming them.
It all starts well before the first pitch, Wednesday morning to be exact. That's when rainbows of fold-out chairs begin appearing along 4th Street in downtown Williamsport, a short drive from where all the games are played.
We're just going to move out here a little bit.
Around 11, Lisa Angelo and her young niece are staking out their spots near a stationery store.
We bring them over around this time every year, and then we'll go home for a little bit, have some lunch, and then we'll come back about 3, 3:30 and just watch people and wait for the parade.
That's the annual Little League World Series Parade, an old-timey celebration showcasing the 16 teams in the series and Williamsport. Angelo has cherished this time of year since childhood.
I take about a week and a half off, yep, and go to all the games, and we're over there almost every day and every night.
Scream and shout! Let that millionaire spirit out! Scream and shout! Let that millionaire spirit out!
As cheerleaders from Williamsport High School pass by her on the parade route, longtime resident Kelly Anderson says she enjoys the 35,000 people who briefly double the town's population each summer.
You get to see all the different teams and visit with all the different cultures that come to our area because this area does not have a lot of culture.
Local businesses also look forward to this time of year. John Yokodinsky, who owns Converge Gallery, planned for it specifically. He extended the run of an abstract art exhibit because he knew there'd be more eyeballs during the Little League World Series.
Typically in the gallery world, summers are slow. It's weird in Williamsport because summer's big for First Friday. You know, the weather's nice, tons of people are in town, and we also have the Little League, which brings tons of people.
The crowds are also music to Kurt Kane's ears. He owns Long Island Pizza, an enormous black and white checkered space inside a strip mall.
We are set up for volume because this is based on a, you know, New York City shop where I'm from, and I am just kind of used to the crowds, and I love it. I thrive on it. That's my adrenaline.
Inside the Alabaster Coffee Roaster and Tea Company, owner Carl Fisher says, yeah, the extra people bring some headaches, like traffic, but that's just part of the tradition, one residents still get excited about.
That's the great thing about traditions. You know, when you can find something that's regular, that you can find comfort in, and that you enjoy, why wouldn't you want to repeat those things?
This year's Little League World Series champion gets crowned Sunday. I'm Aaron Mozell, WHYY News.
I don't care if I never get back. Root, root for the whole.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov and Kimberly Haas, with help today from Brett Rader. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Tomorrow evening, we'll look at how sinkholes happen, like the one in Kensington that made news this week, and what can be done to prevent them. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.